is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian. Sweet Lord, believe it or not, the 27th of November, year of our Lord, 2022. Folks, the year is almost gone and it feels like it just started. I hope that you are living your time well. I hope that you are paying attention and keeping aware that time is passing. Because once it's gone, you don't get it back. And it surely does seem to be passing in a bit of a hurry these days. So, as I say, I hope, keeping aware, keep your eye on the clock, folks. I still can't believe it's already November 27th. Christmas is just around the corner. Thanksgiving is just past. I hope that you had much in your life for which to give God. I know I certainly did, and I reiterate on this wonderful public platform the goodness of God, and I thank him for all of his grace in my life. And with that, let's begin the political review for November 27th, 2022. Now, you know how it goes. The first segment of the show is where we review, look at some of the top stories in politics and the political arena course of the week. And then we have a segment where we look at stories that I feel went under the radar, which means that in my opinion, they didn't get traction or not enough people paid attention to these stories, in my view. It's purely subjective. And then we'll look at a story that that I would consider to be sort of the top story for the week. This week's top story is not directly from Bahamian politics, but I think, especially given last week's show, where we talked about what it is the Bahamas intends to do, the money to fund the government's agenda. I think it's an important story that has developed out of COP 27. So, of course, we begin with the continuing FTX saga. Keep in mind now that the U.S. House of Representatives has demanded that Sam Bankman-Fried appear before Congress to explain and account for the collapse of FTX, which left the company owing $8 billion. And just as context, the collapse of FTX has sparked tension in the United States, potentially, and it has engendered intense international scrutiny of this jurisdiction, with questions swirling around the Securities Commission of the Bahamas, the actions taken by that regulator, the actions of the government of the Bahamas when confronted with a collapse that saw billions of dollars potentially vanish into the ether. Well, this week, the Securities Commission of the Bahamas fired back at the representatives of FTX trading to raise concern over the commission's decision to transfer some of FTX's assets to a digital wallet controlled by the Securities Commission of the Bahamas. The commission said in a statement that is still available on its website that it made the right decision in the face of continued concerns about hacking on the cryptocurrency exchange. Now, again, by way of context, FTX Trading and over 100 other affiliate companies filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in the US. And they appeared in court this last Tuesday and raised the issue of the actions of the Securities Commission again. Trading is the US-based affiliate of FTX Digital, which is, as we understand, a Bahamas-registered company. FTX Digital Markets, or FDM, is the Bahamian branch of FTX, and the company's Bahamian liquidators say that it is the nerve center of the entire FDM, and it was placed into liquidation on November 10th. That date is very important because the U.S. liquidation proceedings started on November 12th. A lawyer for FTX Trading in the U.S. said there is evidence that there had been movement of assets out to the Bahamas. And he said, that same lawyer said that there had been somewhat cryptic comments that had been issued by the government of the Bahamas as to the actions that had been taken with respect to certain assets. FTX's new CEO, John Ray III, when Fried resigned, said it bluntly. And I remember John Ray was the guy appointed to handle the liquidation of Enron. So he's got a lot of experience. But he says, the debtors, and this is a quote, have credible evidence that the Bahamian government is responsible for directing unauthorized access to the debtors' systems for the purpose of obtaining digital assets of the debtors. That took place after the commencement of these cases, unquote. Now that's a serious allegation, obviously. But the Securities Commission is adamant that this is, in fact, a misrepresentation. So here I'm going to read from the Commission's statement just so that the context is clear. And the statement is a good couple of paragraphs long, so bear with me. FDM, again, that's FTX Digital Management, which is the Bahamian company, was incorporated in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas on July 22nd, 2021. It was a duly registered as a digital asset business under the Bahamas Digital Assets and Registered Exchanges Act 2020, the quote-unquote DARE Act. Pursuant to Bahamas law, on November 2, the commission determined that the customers and creditors of FDM were in need of the protection of the DARE Act and suspended FDM's license to conduct business and subsequently filed a petition before the Bahamian Supreme Court to place FDM into provisional liquidation. This action, the first against an FTX entity, placed FDM under the control of a court-appointed fiduciary and removed prior management from exercising any authority over FDM. Given the nature of digital assets and the risks associated with hacking and compromise, the commission determined that placing FDM into liquidation was not sufficient to protect the customers and creditors of FDM. Accordingly, on November 12, 2022, the commission sought an additional order from the Supreme Court of the Bahamas for authority under the DARE Act to transfer all digital assets of FTX into digital wallets under the exclusion for the benefit of clients and creditors of FDN. It is unfortunate that in Chapter 11 filings, the new CEO of FTX Trading Limited misrepresented this timely action through the intemperate and inaccurate allegations lodged in the transfer motion. John Ray and his team have asked the court in Delaware to issue a motion to transfer, or they've asked them to transfer the proceedings filed by the Bahamian Joint Provisional Liquidators in the Southern District of New York to their court because they want to have control of all of the bankruptcy proceedings. So FTX Trading filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. The Provisional Liquidators of FTX Digital Management filed under a different section of the bankruptcy code, Chapter 15, which seeks to have the Bahamas recognized as the primary jurisdiction for the bankruptcy proceedings. All right, so back to the statement. It is also concerning that the Chapter 11 debtors chose to rely on the statements of individuals that they have in other filings characterized as unreliable sources of information and potentially seriously compromised. Further, the statements made by the purported officers of FTX Trading Limited and the other purported Chapter 11 debtors that they have suffered significant thefts, that their systems were compromised, and that they continue to face new hacking attempts reinforce the wisdom of the Commission's prompt action to secure these digital assets. Then the Commission goes on to commit to continuing to evaluate the situation and act in accordance with the directions of and collaborate with other supervisor authorities. The final paragraph is worth reading as well. It says, in addition, the Commission will continue to investigate the facts and circumstances regarding FTX's liquidity crisis and any potential violations of Bahamian law, and hold any responsible companies and individuals accountable in cooperation with other regulatory agencies and law enforcement, both in the Bahamas and in other affected countries in connection with their own investigations. There is, you draw your own conclusions from what the Securities Commission statement says, but if I had to reduce it into a single statement, it's that statement would read, listen, we did what we had to do, and we had every legal right to do it. Meanwhile, in a related story to this, Attorney General Ryan Pinder this week denied that the government seized any assets from FTX Digital Markets, and he cautioned individuals not to spread fake news. Pinder was talking at the office of the Prime Minister in response to claims surrounding FTX's bankruptcy. Remember those claims that we just talked about, that the government seized assets from the company. Now, Pinder is scheduled to give a national address today about the FTX collapse. So make sure you tune in to hear that. That promises to be very interesting, and I think it's an important issue that we should all be fully cognizant of and fully aware of. Pinder was clear to explain the actions of the regulator, that is the Securities Commission, were not the actions of the government, but the actions of an independent regulator. And if it seems like they're splitting hairs, they're not splitting hairs. I think the Attorney General here is making an incredibly important point. The Securities Commission of the Bahamas is an independent regulator. It is not an arm of the government. It regulates our jurisdiction, which means that the government has subject to the regulator in order for it to be independent. So it is untrue, patently, factually, and existentially, if you want to go that far, to say that the Securities Commission's actions were the actions of the government. It is very important to separate those two. And I think the Attorney General was quite right to make the separation clear. Of course, that doesn't serve the narrative of the U.S. Liquidators, but for Bahamians and for others who want to have the facts clear and unadulterated, it is incredibly important to remember the actions of the Securities Commission of the Bahamas are the actions of an independent regulator and not the actions of the government of the Bahamas. Next, in the political review, moving away from FTX, will form an interministerial committee to address the Bahamas' shantytown issue. That committee would be led by the Minister of Works, Alfred Sears. And the Building Control Act comes under Sears' portfolio and is considered a key aspect of the legal framework around this vexing issue. Interpretation of the Building Control Act will be crucial in how the government is able to move forward with its expressed desire to get rid of shanty towns around the country. The Minister's administration also had a cabinet subcommittee aimed at addressing the issue. That committee was led by Minister of Labor at the time, Dion Folks. The Davis administration claims that its committee differs and says that in addition to Works, the ministers of Immigration, National Security, Social Services, and Foreign Affairs will sit on this committee. Press Secretary Clint Watson announced the formation of the committee and noted that illegal structures are present in Exuma, Andrus, and North Lutheran, as well as Abaco. Watson said that once the illegal structures were cataloged, the law would be followed regarding the proper serving of notice to persons occupying the illegal homes, to be followed either by demolition or a determination for the persons to move and for the structures to be dealt with, quote unquote, accordingly, whether that means taking them down or repurposing those structures. Watson made an important observation that the complicity of Bahamians has held up the process of addressing shantytowns, pointing out that in many cases, the illegal structures are located on land given to Bahamians for farming. Watson said that rather than farming, some Bahamians are in fact renting out the space to persons who fall into the category and are making money from doing so. Now, as you can imagine, this complicates matters because you can. It's very difficult to walk up to someone who is paying rent and tell them that they are living illegally if they are paying rent every month for the place where they live. So that is an issue that will have to be dealt with very clearly in its own way. In 2021, under the Free National Movement Administration, Supreme Court Justice Cheryl Grant Thompson ordered the government to cease and desist further demolitions of shantytowns on Abaco and ruled that the government must get approval from the court if it wished to demolish structures in shantytowns on the island. Shantytown residents challenged the government's 2018 policy, which sought to get rid of shantytowns in the Bahamas. Implementation of the policy was halted after an injunction banning demolition on New Providence and parts of Abaco was granted by Grant Thompson in 2018. A substantive ruling has not yet been made, and as a result, the injunction remains in place. That means that prior to any demolition activity, regardless of its committee, must go to the Supreme Court and get approval from the Supreme Court before engaging in any demolition of what they deem to be illegal structures. I hope you heard that. We at the Political Review heard from Abaco Local. We spoke with Abaco Local Government Councilman Roscoe Thompson in the aftermath of Hurricane Nicole last week. And we asked him how things are on the ground in Abaco. You know, at the time, he was talking about who came to see how people were doing and how people rode through the storm. But then he had some other things to add. And I thought it was, good for us to hear what Mr. Thompson had to say. So Christoph, if you could play the Roscoe Thompson clip.
Good day, sir. It was nice that the mover with the deputy prime minister, acting prime minister. I was a little disappointed they just stopped at the mud. Well, the farm, that they didn't go further north. But that's just me, you know, where the flooding had occurred in Blackwood, Fire Road, you know, going north, Green Turtle Key. It was good to see the opposition leader here too, which did tour the north. And went to Green Turtle. People on the ground are mostly asking for the extension of the CSRS order. I really hope this administration heeds that and, you know, gives Abaco and Grand Bahama an extension on that and not on the case by case how they wanted to do it. They can police it a little differently in that regards. So overall, we fared well in Abaco, you know, in that regards. I just would like to see the red tape moved that is here right now in regards to the CSRS. That's my only, one of my only concerns. The other is the illegal immigration, not so much illegal, but the illegal immigration and the illegal buildings. That is a big concern here, still going on. Roads are in terrible shape, just like Nassau. Potholes going south, potholes going north. Seems we can't get central government to do much here, except keep on taking the VAT and duty that they have on things. So I'm so far in this administration, I'm very disappointed. I thought a lot more would have come out with the PLP, even though I sit on the opposite side of them. I expected more to be going on here, and it hasn't happened yet.
That was Roscoe Thompson, who is a long-serving councilman in Abaco local government. And I think that his frustrations are representative of many in Abaco, if not most. The government recently did extend the CSRS order to the end of the year, but both Mr. Thompson and the president, the new president of the Abaco Chamber of Commerce, DeGregory Mialis, had mentioned that their desire is for that extension to go another 3 years, not simply just to the end of the calendar year. So we'll keep on with paying attention to what's going on there. We'll take a short break here, and when we come back, we'll get into some conversations about price control and some other things. But you're tuned into The Political Review. My name is K. Quincy Parker. I'm your host. And we'll be right back after this short break.
One in every four people in the Bahamas face some level of food insecurity. Through our annual Feed 5000 program, AML Foods remains steadfast in our commitment to help those struggling with hunger and will donate 5,000 to provide holiday meals to families this Christmas. But we need your help. From November 14th to December 19th, show your support and donate at the register at any Solomon's, Costrite, Solomon's Fresh Market, Exuma Markets, or Domino's locations in New Providence, Grand Bahama, and Exuma. Together, let's put an end to hunger.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. 2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Folks, you're listening to The Political Review with Quincy Parker. That's me. I'm your host. And we've chopped it up about FTX. We've talked about the government's new interministerial committee to address the shantytown issue. And now we've also heard from Roscoe Thompson, who we spoke to a couple of weeks ago about the situation in Abaco. He gave us a bit of an update on how things are doing on the island right now. And now we are going to continue with the political review for this week. Before we get into the stories that we think went under the radar. And next up in TPR is the Minister of Economic Affairs, Michael Halkidis, who said this week that agreeing with the government's extended price control list, which was introduced to bring relief to Bahamians grappling with inflation. Now, I'm sorry, I kind of have to interrupt the show here and point out that when I was at the food store this morning, I thought to myself, you know, just get some eggs. Make some breakfast, whatever the case may be. Eggs, the price of eggs at City Market and Super Value, we've gone crazy. $5 and change for a half a dozen organic eggs, as much as $7 for a dozen eggs. These things are now costing as much as $2 more than they did just weeks ago. And that is not a small change. You know, I don't know how that counts as relief. But anyway, I'm just saying. Back to the story. Alkaidis said the government has inspectors in the field who are reporting that, by and large, there is compliance with the new regulations. On November 6th, grocers rejected the government's latest amended list of items that had been added to the breadbasket. The president of the Retail Grocers Association, Philip Benneby, and the Super Value food store chain owner, Rupert Roberts, said that what the government was offering in its final list for gazetting was, quote, unacceptable. When asked about that this week, Alkaidis said that, first of all, it's not an offer. The government made amendments to the price control regulations, expanding the list of the category of items under price control, accept it or reject it. It simply is the law. Alkaidis added that conversations had been had and that a position had been agreed. And he said that the government and the grocers had agreed that the government would enforce the expanded price control list and would also work towards a new list that both sides could agree on. In October, the government did a 15% maximum markup for wholesalers and a 25% maximum markup for retailers on certain categories of items. The items on the government's final amended price control list are the same categories of items gazetted last month, which triggered major pushback from grocers. What is different, and what was announced by Alkaidis earlier this month, is that the government has agreed to an additional 5% maximum markup on perishable items for retailers on New Providence and Grand Bahama, and that the government has also agreed to an additional 5% markup on non-perishable items and an additional 10% on perishables for the family islands. That is what is different than what was originally gazetted. Alkaidis said the government had agreed to a conversation over the six-month period that the new list is in effect. Folks, I apologize, but I have to take a short break just here. We'll be back in a few minutes here on the Political Review. Thank you so much for your patience. We'll be right back on the Political Review.
To think of the bank as my personal ATM machine. If I wanted a new car, new furniture, a weekend trip to Miami, no problem, just max out the credit card or top up my loan. I was a big baller until I realized that 75% of my salary was going to pay back all those loans. Fidelity's personal financial coaching was the best solution. Fidelity gave me a plan with a debt consolidation loan that has a built-in savings that pays 5% interest. I now only have one low monthly payment, plus money in my pocket. Give Fidelity Bank a call at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit any of Fidelity's locations or visit a website at fidelitygroup.com.
Wait, you know what's going down tomorrow?
Nobody, what happening?
Joe bringing these knives to school? He could do Junior in?
For what?
Wait, he fooled with Joe girl?
Mother sick. And you know Junior don't bark down for nothing. So that means he got a big fight tomorrow.
So whose side you want?
Side? I trying to stay in school, not Simpson fan. We gotta tell somebody about this fight.
Tell somebody? I ain't no snitch. I mean cool, you know.
Wait, if you so cool, then you need to stay in school and stay out of the fight.
Yeah, but if I don't hang on Joe's side, him and he boys coming for me next.
All right, so we definitely gotta tell somebody. We gotta prevent the fight.
What I say, I don't want nobody calling me snitch.
We could just call Crime Stoppers. You could report what you know, and nobody gotta know it's you.
So how do I wait?
All you gotta do is call them, or you text them through the Crack Crime Bahamas app, and nobody can know it's you.
Then the police come looking for me for more info, and when they finish with them, Joe them coming looking for me?
When you call Crime Stoppers, the calls go directly to Miami, and they don't ask nothing about you. Then you can get the pin from them, and you can claim a reward later using that same pin.
Plus, everything's scrambled, so nobody can read what you said.
Calls 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands. Loss of family members is very isolating, and people who have experienced loss appreciate when others have shared their grief. If you can't be there in person, go to the Nassau Guardian's website online at thenassauguardian.com and visit our obituary link. The Nassau Guardian's interactive obituary link allows you to read the funeral announcement, express condolences, or place photos on the online guestbook for one full year. Losing a loved one is painful, but that pain isn't the worst thing to happen. Friends, loved ones, colleagues, and neighbors who ignore the loss compound the pain. Should the bereaved family wish to place the obituary and photos on our obituary site, just contact the Guardian's funeral industry partners or the Nassau Guardian. Remember, there isn't one magic rust that will make the loss less painful or easier to bear. The Nassau Guardian's obituary link, available online at thenassauguardian.com.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Girl, you see how Cora eye look funny, all black up yesterday?
But she say she bump into a wall when she's running after the churn them.
Yeah, but last Saturday, you see her arm was all black and blue, right?
So what you saying? You think something wrong between her and Jack?
I ain't sure, but you know Jack is a jealous man. I hear him and Cora last Friday. I hear him say he hear Cora have eyes for Junior.
Now, you know that ain't true. Cora is a good woman. Does mind her business, take care of them churn and go to church every Sunday. So what you think we should do?
I think we should report Jack, you know. Cora don't say nothing, but silence hides violence. And we don't want to line up in the cemetery.
Not me. I ain't getting in nobody business. Then Jack come after me and I line up next to Cora.
No, man, we could call or text Crime Stopper. And remember, we can even get some grocery money for our tip.
Remind me again how this work.
We can call them in Miami at 328-TIPS or 328-8477. Or when we in the island, call toll free at 300-TIPS or 300-8477. And if you don't have no minutes, use the Crack Crime Bahamas app and we could text them. And the messages get on mix up before it leave your phone. So nobody can know what you're saying.
So what are we waiting on then? Let's go earn some grocery money.
At a time when jobs are hard to find, crime is a concern, and Bahamians are uncertain about the future of the country, there is one paper you can rely on as your source of news and commentary. The Nassau Guardian delves deeper into the issues. We ask the tough questions. We tell your stories. If you haven't already, pick up a copy today. The Nassau Guardian. News and views that be 44.
Do you know you can get your business cards designed and printed for as low as 18 cents a card? If it's a poster you want, you can pay as little as $6 a square foot. If your print needs are short or long run, digital printing, wide format, or print consultation, call the best. Call Printmasters. Printmasters' goal is to provide its clients with the highest level of personal, professional service at an affordable price. Our state-of-the-art technology also makes working together efficient and easy. Laminations, business cards, flyers, posters, window and floor decals are just a few of the digitized print services offered at Printmasters.
Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located at the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Guess what I did in school today?
Hold on, sweetie. Mommy's sending a text.
But Mommy, my teacher said that you're not supposed to text and drive.
I know what I'm doing.
Oh, look, Mommy, the Smith twins. Mommy, watch out!
In 2017, approximately 54 people died of traffic accidents. A percentage of these fatalities occurred as a result of texting while driving. Just taking your eyes off the road for 5 seconds can increase your chance of crashing. Remember, even the smallest voice counts.
Texting, texting, texting. Brought to you by UB Radio and Guardian Radio 96.9.
Great is thy faithfulness, O God, my Father.
Hello, I'm Simeon Hall. I grew up through a dead-end corner called Choke Neck Alley off Market Street. I dropped out of school in the fifth grade and worked as a carpenter's helper for McAlpine Company. But it was while in the alley I discovered my life's calling was to preach the gospel. A Catholic nun at Aquinas night classes inspired me when she told the class that we all were made in God's image. It's a long way from Choke Neck Alley to preaching throughout the Bahamas, the Caribbean, and all the inhabited continents of the world. The circumstances of your birth need not dictate what you can do or where you can go in this life. Young man, drop your gun. Find your life's highest purpose. Lift yourself from the gutters of crime. Your next crime might lead to your death, and loved ones will have to bury you. Eternity is just ahead. In which section will you spend it? Non-smoking or smoking? Heaven or hell? You are made in God's image. So this week, attend a church of your choice and reconnect with God.
Do you know you can get your business cards designed and printed for as low as 18 cents a card? If it's a poster you want, you can pay as little as $6 a square foot. If your print needs a short or wide format or print consultation, call the best. Call Printmasters. Printmasters' goal is to provide its clients with the highest level of personal, professional service at an affordable price. Our state-of-the-art technology also makes working together efficient and easy. Laminations, business cards, flyers, posters, window and floor decals are just a few of the digitized print services offered at Printmasters. Call 302-2361, 302-2361, or visit us at the Nassau Guardian Building in Oaksfield. Print with the best. Print with Printmasters.
One in every four people in the Bahamas face some level of food insecurity. Through our annual Feed 5000 program, AML Foods remains steadfast in our commitment to help those struggling with hunger and will donate 5,000 to provide holiday meals to families this Christmas. But we need your help. From November 14th to December 19th, show your support and donate at the register at any Solomon's, Co-Markets, or Domino's locations in New Providence, Grand Bahama, and Exuma. Together, let's put an end to hunger.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good afternoon and welcome back to the Political Review. Thank you so very much for your kind patience and for sticking with us here at the Political Review. My name is K. Quincy Parker. I'm your host, and I'm really grateful to you. It's really been a pleasure these last however many years since we've been doing this together. I wanted to also mention that normally, of course, the show traditionally has not been a call-in show, but you know, I've been talking with Dwight about that, and if you wish to call and comment or discuss anything that we talk about, the phone lines are open. You can call us at 323-6232. 325-4316 or 325-4259. And as usual, you can send us your text messages at 422-4796. That's 422-4796. And we would love to hear from you anytime. Now, Halkidis is in our next story in the Political Review as well. He being a very important minister in the administration and the subject of much political to-ing and fro-ing. So I wanted to mention that he had said in a statement that the world's second largest cryptocurrency exchange, that's OKX, is committed to growing the digital asset space in the Bahamas. The minister's statement explained that OKX is the lead sponsor of the upcoming and inaugural D3 Bahamas FinTech Festival, which is being sponsored by the Securities Commission of the Bahamas. OKX recently became a licensee of the commission under the DARE Act, and Halkidis and a team from the Ministry of Economic Affairs, they dropped in at OKX's office while visiting Singapore recently for a meeting of the Society of Trust and Estate Practitioners. And Halkidis said that the government has embraced OKX as it continues to move quickly to turn the Bahamas into its regional fintech hub. He said the government is fully embracing the digital economy opportunities coming through the various fintech, digital assets, and Web3 businesses that are interested in the Bahamas due to our robust financial services and digital assets legislative framework. According to Halkidis, OKX has demonstrated its commitment to the Bahamas with its recent appointment of a Bahamian CEO, that's Dr. Jillian Bethel. And the hiring of Bahamians in key positions. Given that the recent collapse of the Bahamas domiciled FTX, which only became a DARE registrant a year ago, Halkidis said that it is important that investors like OKX continue to show an interest in establishing a foothold in the Bahamas and hire Bahamians at the highest level. These, he said, are the kinds of high-level employment opportunities the government believes will become the norm, given the Bahamas' high levels of talent and the ideal regulatory environment for fintech. Next in the Political Review for this week's Development Center, signed a memorandum of understanding with the Nature Conservancy this week, and that MOU forms a 4-year strategic partnership which includes $400,000 to fund projects in the blue economy, and it includes a blue economy accelerator program. The executive director of the Access Accelerator, Samantha Rowe, said during a press conference held to mark the signing of the MOU, the application process for the program could begin by the middle of 2023. She said the Access Accelerator had proposed the creation of a Blue Economy Accelerator program in an effort to develop the sectors associated with the blue economy and bring high-value jobs and wealth through advancing entrepreneurial and innovative support to MSMEs in the Bahamas. She added that a strategic focus on MSME development for the blue economy plays a vital role in developing viable reef-positive businesses and protect critical natural resources for the Bahamas while strengthening local communities. The Nature Conservancy's Northern Caribbean and Bahamas Program Director, Marcia Musgrove, said in a statement, that it was the Global Fund for Coral Reefs that chose to fund this project to the tune of $400,000. Musgrove said the project would directly benefit small and medium business owners and local communities across the Bahamas who are committed to sustainable use of natural resources, especially coral reefs. She added that together with the Access Accelerator, the goal is to support up to 50 local businesses over the next 4 years. And that wraps up the political review section of the show. And next, we go under the radar to examine two stories this week that I felt should have or could have gotten a lot more attention. I think these stories deserve a second look, and I think Bahamians should pay very close attention to both of these stories. So this week, under the radar, we begin with the Senate. And during a sitting, a joint sitting of the House of Assembly, Senate has called for the criminalization of rape in all forms. Adderley said the country's long walk to freedom has not yet ended when the marital bed has become a violent mattress. Rape is rape, she said, notwithstanding the context. Adderley issued the call during a joint sitting that brought members of parliament and senators together in the House of Assembly for the first time in a decade to highlight contributions women have made to the Bahamas' development over the years. Now, with regard to marital rape, which may not have been the words she used, but certainly is what she's talking about, while the Davis administration is committed to criminalizing marital rape, having drafted a sexual offenses amendments bill 2022 in September, at least three previous administrations have backed off from addressing the issue. The Attorney General had said that the bill would be presented for debate before the end of the year. So keep an eye on that clock. In addition to the matter of rape, Senate President Adderley also called for a gender-based violence act. This isn't the first time that she's pushed for legislation against gender-based violence. In fact, in February, Adderley urged legislators to take immediate action and adopt a zero-tolerance approach to addressing gender-based violence in the Bahamas. She noted at the time that she was pleased the Minister of State for Social Services, Lisa Ramming, had indicated that there was a draft domestic violence. As we sit today, 8 months later, that bill has not yet been tabled in the House of Assembly. I'm going to take a moment's pause here and ask a question. Does anybody else kind of notice a trend? They announce legislation, they've drafted, quote unquote, but that legislation seems to take a very long time to get to the House for debate. You draw your own conclusions. Back to the story. In Ms. Adderley's communication, she outlined further disparities that women face in the Bahamas, including disparities in the rate of people diagnosed with and subsequently dying from breast cancer, which disproportionately affects women, disparities in salary compensation, promotion and benefits, even representation of women in the House of Assembly. It is an occasionally unpopular to discuss gender equality in the Bahamas. You and I, listener, are both well aware of the arguments that are that are raised whenever we talk about women and men getting the same pay for the same work. People who cast the issue in hyper-religious terms seem to believe that there is some biblical support for a woman earning less than a man, although the Bible anywhere. And when you look at the numbers, when I first reported on this when I first came home from school and I was the Bahama Journal of Love 97 News, when I did the research, the pay gap between men and women was on the order of women earning about 75% of what men were earning. Even, you know, the disparity was a little less at the top executive level, but even at the top executive level, women were still earning less than their male counterparts. And when you look at promotions, benefits, the questions have to be asked. And for a country like the Bahamas, where women make up the majority of the community, as a question of logic and common sense to me, if women make up the majority of this community, I don't understand how come it is so difficult to pass laws or enact policies that either protect women or enhance their rights, their right to safety of their person, their right to earn equal pay for equal work, their right to representation in the House of Assembly. I mean, my God, you can't get in the House of Assembly unless the women vote for you. Forget vote for you. If the women don't hit the ground for you, if the women don't campaign for you, you can't win. You can't get in the House of Assembly. Every general is a woman. And if not a woman, every general works hand in glove with a woman, because the women are the ones who get out the vote. The women are the ones who get people to get off their backside and go and elect a member of parliament. And yet, you look at the House of Assembly, which is supposed to be representative of our community, and you would think that women don't participate in our local politics. It's insane. It is something that just drives me bonkers. I do not understand it. I don't mean to preach, so I'm gonna leave it there, but it drives me absolutely batshit crazy. It really does. Our next story, our second story under the radar this week, Education Minister Glenys Hannah-Martin has said that her ministry is seriously concerned about the increasing number of teachers who are opting not to be transferred to the Family Islands amid a shortage of specialty educators on those islands. She was speaking at a press conference or press briefing at the office of the Prime Minister, and the minister reiterated that officials are seeing shortages in such core subjects as English, mathematics, and science. She added that officials are aggressively working to issues by hiring more workers. The minister said the major challenge of public education infrastructure is facing right now is a shortage of language arts and English teachers. She said the government is aware that there are islands now that are still experiencing deficits. And I'm gonna quote the minister here I'm just gonna quote her. She says, and I quote, "We are aware and we are concerned, and also we're still hiring teachers through the system. And I've spoken to the public service minister of state. She understands the urgency. The minister himself understands the urgency. And we're working with the Public Service Commission to prioritize teachers to get them through the system, the bureaucracy, to get them on the ground, to get them on the ground and transferred. So Hannah Martin's observations, I think, are really interesting here. She pointed out that it's actually a new phenomenon for teachers to refuse to go to the family islands. She said that in the past, teachers were more open to the idea of being transferred to these areas. And she said that because of this new reluctance, officials are now trying to ensure that new recruits are aware that the profession is not based solely in Nassau. The move to secure more teachers comes as the Ministry of Education, Science and Technology prepares to have students tested for learning loss. Testing exercises were originally due to summer, but were pushed back to this month. And Acting Education Director Dominique McCartney Russell said the delay was because a team to facilitate the exercises had yet to be assembled. Gladys Hannah-Martin said this week that the ministry has since made headway in that regard by hiring a project officer who would oversee the process. And she said that the next step would include the training of teachers. She said a company had been selected and that a person had been identified, appointed, and contracted, who was a former distinguished educator. And the next step would be the teachers, and they would be trained to assist in rolling out the testing. And the minister said that she's hoping that it can be done simultaneously so that testing can be across the board in a short period of time. And once measurements have been taken and an understanding has been achieved as to what's really going on with these students, and a program will be designed to help accelerate the mitigation of any learning loss. And I think that that's an incredibly important point that the minister is making there. Well, let me finish the story first. Education officials have previously lamented the pandemic's effect on education as quite significant learning loss. This, of course, is largely due to classes being held in a virtual format for most of the pandemic, as opposed to classes in the in-person setting. The minister said this is a particular type of loss. She pointed out that this isn't normal loss, and it has something to do with the big gap and blackout that happened in the pandemic. Those are her words. She said that the fact that many young people have not been online or were online, but were not really online or couldn't function online. But this is happening all over. We're seeing the issue, she said. And it's seeking to be out in front of it. And so she's hoping that in another couple of weeks that the ministry will be able to identify a certain date when the testing can roll out. Asked if testing would begin next year rather than this year, the minister was clear that she hoped testing would start before, but she acknowledged it could be 2023 before testing starts, given that schools are set to go on Christmas break in next month. And one of the, see, this is important stuff, folks. I want to point out something that Michael Halkidis said when he talked about OKX. Remember the last sentence in the story. He said that the kinds of high-level employment opportunities that people like Dr. Jillian Bethel and those have, he said that the government believes that those things, those opportunities would become the norm given the Bahamas' high levels of talent. The fact is that there is a significant risk to that high level of talent that the Minister of Economic Affairs is talking about due to this learning loss that has been identified by the Minister of Education. This is not simply about whether or not these students missed a couple of assignments, right? This is about whether or not their education has been crippled. Are we able, as a society, to claw back whatever these children have lost in terms of educational time and energy and help them to move forward so that they at least attain the standard and so that they have the opportunity to exceed the standard like so many of us have done. I think of Dr. Jillian Bethel. She's a pal. And, you know, Jillian is, and to think that the next Jillian Bethel, for instance, is one of these kids who, because they weren't in the classroom, fell so far behind their potential that it's questionable whether or not we could help them make it up is cause for serious concern. So this is why I think that we need to pay extra careful, extra special attention to what's going on with the teachers right now, especially those teachers who are refusing to go to the Family Islands because they are infrastructure folks. They are more necessary than good roads. They are as necessary as food and water and electricity. And I know that the Bahamas Public Service, Bahamas Union of Teachers have a mandate to ensure quality of life for their members and that they work in pleasant or acceptable circumstances. But at some point, the needs of the children and the future of the country also have to be a factor in your consideration. I think it's not just up to the government to convince newly minted teachers that they should be going, that they should be fine being stationed on the Family Island. I think the union should work on that. I think the University of the Bahamas School of Education, where most of these students are coming from, should work on that. It should be a part of their educational process that they may be posted at Island or Freeport or Abaco or wherever. And it's, I I have a vibe. I'm sorry. I have a vibe with these teachers who refuse to go to the filing address. I hope that there's a solution, that we find a solution for that before things get worse. I'll just leave that there. So that is under the radar for this week. Now this week we don't have an interview, and instead we're gonna go on to look at something that came out of COP27. And I think this is important, and let me put it in context. So we'll call this the political review top story for this week. And again, just to consider the context, the Bahamas' economy, as did economies all around the world, of course, took a tremendous hit after Hurricane Dorian come by the COVID-19 pandemic. And while there has been a resurgence of a sort in tourism, ain't no cookies in the cookie jar. The cupboard is bare. The kitty is empty, right? And the government is scrapping for ways to increase government revenue. I heard the financial secretary, Simon Wilson, the other day talk about the fact that, you know, government revenue is increasing and that he's pleased with the state of government revenue. Well, I mean, frankly speaking, what do you expect the financial secretary to say? Government revenue in the Bahamas is end-loaded anyway. Most of the revenue comes in at the last half of the fiscal year. So, you know, that's all going to balance out in the wash. And we'll see when the budget is presented next year, you know, just really where we are when we look at the actual numbers, not the projected numbers. Which is not to say that there'll be, you know, any different necessarily, I'm just saying. But when you consider some of the things that have been promised by the administration, and I'm thinking, in particular, of course, I'm thinking of capital projects, capital intensive projects like the new hospital in Grand Bahama and new hospital in New Providence, both of which were specifically linked to funding from carbon credits, which, as we established last week, were initially supposed to be listed on the FTX exchange and funded in part by cryptocurrency. Given the collapse of FTX, the government has to find a new mechanism for creating its carbon credit instrument. But even once that instrument is created, when you look at how much a carbon credit is, now keep in mind, a carbon credit is a measure of for every 1 ton of carbon monoxide emitted or carbon gases emitted into the atmosphere, a company or an emitter can pay a set fee to quote unquote offset that carbon emission. So each carbon credit represents a ton of carbon emissions into the atmosphere. And when you look at the price of the carbon credits, the price range that I saw over the last 3 weeks of research, they're as low as $40 per credit in some places in the U.S., up to a little over $120, 90-something euro, which is around $120 U.S. in Europe. So these credits for a ton of carbon emissions is $40. So in order to raise, let's pull out the calculator and let's do some math together, right? Let's pick an average number. Let's say every carbon credit, let's say we set our price at $70. No, let's say we set our price at $100. So 300 million, which is about what it would take to rebuild or to build a new hospital facility in New Providence, divided by 100. So that's 3 million carbon credits that need to be sold. Is that even a reasonable number to get to that one project? We don't understand. I'm not saying it's not. It might well be. You understand what I'm saying? It might well be a reasonable number, but I don't know, because the discussion has been so nebulous and there's so little detail that we don't understand what the government is thinking or how the government plans to make this real, if the government does plan to make it real. And I'm not a brave David Staten. As I said last week, he's my prime minister too. I'm not sitting here hoping that something goes wrong with the carbon credit. What I want is an honest, upfront, open discussion. Tell me how it's going to work. Tell me how it has to work in order for what you have promised that it will do to come to pass. So last week, I mentioned the blue bonds, which was a way that countries, I think it was St. Vincent, Belize, and another country in the region had taken a Barbados, that's right, Barbados, used blue bonds to raise money to effect climate change mitigation and adaptation projects. And now we come to another funding source. And this is all in the interests of exploring avenues that are available for the Bahamas to access, since we say it's all about the money. You know, these are some avenues that we can use to really get some money, possibly. So Gaston Browne is the Prime Minister of Antigua and Barbuda, and he's also the chairman of the Alliance of Small Island States. And he made a statement on behalf of the Alliance at the Sharm el-Sheikh climate implementation at the first part of the high-level segment of heads of state and government at COP27. And he pointed out that 30 years ago, IOSIS, that would be again the Alliance of Small Island States, proposed a financing mechanism for loss and damage associated with sea level rise. And that today, emissions have already passed dangerous levels, and yet there is still no operational financing mechanism for loss and damage. Christoph, if you could play the Gaston Browne clip so that we could hear what he had to say.
pledge every year for the 27 years of these COP meetings. An entire generation has been born and grown to adulthood. And yet, tomorrow has not come. Governments and corporations come to the COP each year, delivering grand statements with lofty commitments. But these commitments are only partially honored.
Prime Minister Brown told his audience carbon emissions have already passed dangerous levels, and yet there is still no operational financing mechanism for loss and damage. He insisted that must change, as there is no time to delay.
We unequivocally must establish a loss and damage response fund here at this COP. The adoption of the agenda item is just one step, and we look forward to the establishment and operationalization of the fund by 2024.
The Prime Minister placed on the table one of the sources of funding, a profit tax on the lucrative and carbon-intensive oil and gas industry.
In the last 50 years, their profits averaged $1 trillion per year and is in 2022. In the first half of this year, six fossil fuel companies, and I emphasize six, made more than enough money to cover the cost of major climate damages in developing countries with nearly $70 billion in profits. It is about time that these companies are made to pay a global carbon tax on their profits as a source of funding for loss and damage. Profligate producers of fossil fuels have benefited from extortionate profits.
Okay, there were another couple of sentences there that I wanted folks to hear, but try and find it on Facebook. Look up Gaston Browne, GastonBrowne, Gaston Browne, Prime Minister of Antigua and Barbuda. Look up his statement at the COP27 high-level summit. High-level segment for heads of state and government, and it's worth reading. And what Brown said that is small countries, this is the new dynamic pathway of justice, where the polluter pays. That is what small island states are bringing to the process of climate diplomacy. This is something that is echoed by Prime Minister Brave Davis's discussion around carbon credit instrument, through which carbon emitters would, in essence, pay a fee to carbon sinks as compensation for those emissions. According to Brown, Ireland, Denmark, and Belgium have announced support to developing countries that have suffered damage due to climate change. But while Brown applauded that move by those three countries, he said it would be right for the major polluters, particularly those with historical responsibility, to follow that worthy example. And you can hear in the subtext exactly who he's talking to. And they have remained, well, okay, let's be fair. You know, France and the UK have had some things to say. They put some money up. So perhaps, but I agree with Brother Brown anyway. Money cometh. I don't know. Boy, do y'all remember that guy? Money cometh unto me now. Y'all remember him? Anyway, so meanwhile, COP27 also adopted something called the Sharm el-Sheikh Implementation Plan. And this is important to the Bahamas because with regard to funding, that plan takes note of a report on the determination of the needs of developing countries and urges developed country parties to provide resources for the second replenishment of the Green Climate Fund, while demonstrating progression over previous replenishments and in line with the programming capacity of the fund. Under the Cancun agreements in 2010, as a dedicated financing vehicle for developing countries within the global climate architecture, serving as the financing mechanism of the Paris Agreement. The fund raised about $10 billion between 2014 and 2018. And when it started official operations in 2016, the fund announced a total of $105 million in new funding from Denmark, Finland, Germany, Ireland, Slovenia, Sweden, Switzerland, and the Walloon region of Belgium. And what Brown was saying, and what the signatories to the Sharm el-Sheikh implementation plan, is that it's time to refill that fund and get the polluters of the world to pay. Now, that sounds good. I mean, it sounds really wonderful. But as usual, long on talk, short on money. When you read through the Sharm el-Sheikh implementation plan, especially the segment on finance, it throws around a lot of numbers. But it doesn't say that this agreement creates a new fund for small island states or for developing countries to access for climate change, adaptation and mitigation, or to deal with loss and damage attributed to climate change. Of course, it urges countries to do so. In fact, Clause 36 says that the implementation plan urges developed country parties to provide enhanced support, including through financial resources, technology transfer, and capacity building to assist developing country parties with respect to both mitigation and adaptation in continuation of their existing obligations under the convention, and encourages other parties to provide or to continue to provide such support voluntarily. Just so you understand what that language means, these developed country parties had promised to create a fund of $100 billion by the year 2020 to have money set aside, that amount of money, $100 billion, to address meaningful climate mitigation and adaptation. The fact is, they didn't even get to the $100 billion by 2020. They were so shy. I think they got to about 70 something billion. And they were supposed to top that fund up every year from 2020 through 2025. And since they didn't even reach the amount in the first place, you know, you can imagine that the developing countries and the small island states are reluctant to believe that there is going to be much improvement. So what does all this mean for us? What it means for us is it's easy to see that for all of the talk in the international community, especially the talk from the major polluters about their responsibility to countries like the Bahamas that are suffering and vulnerable to climate change. The dollars don't follow. They have not traditionally followed. And the dollars that have traditionally come have been not what was promised, and in many cases, not sufficient to make significant change. So Prime Minister Philip Davis, who has made himself a climate champion and is seeking world recognition as a champion for a champion voice for small island states like the Bahamas, on an incredibly difficult task to shake loose any dollars from these countries who are destroying our world. And that is why when statements are made about what will happen as a result of this carbon credit thing or any of the, you know, the wonderful things that are said about COP26 and COP27, I think the Prime Minister needs to be transparent and careful to say what is his hope, what is his wish, and what is his expectation. Because the two are different. They have to be. Brave Davis is a brilliant man. He could look at the history and know that he cannot expect hundreds of millions of dollars to be flowing into the Bahamas' coffers from these companies that pollute on the order of $1 trillion a year. Because if it was going to happen, it would have happened already. And I, ladies and gentlemen, when I am proven wrong, I will be on this show and I will eat my crow and my humble pie with pleasure and delight, because it will mean that the country has accessed a level of funding that can make real change. And as a Bahamian, I want that. But we have to temper our expectations. Here on the Political Review this week, thank you kindly for your wonderful attention. We are ecstatic to be able to spend our Sunday afternoons with you. 2 hours with you is 2 hours well spent. Up next at 6 o'clock is going to be Lady T with Let's Talk Together in English. And Christoph Penniman was my producer for today. Christoph, you are the man. Thank you very much. That's going to do it for me. And I'll see you next week on the Political Review with Kay Quincy Parker. God bless. Bye-bye.